We're here at the American Sea Trade Association CSS 2014 and Seed Expo. With me is Dan Bossi with Ag Resource. Well, let's talk first about the ag market drivers for the coming year and beyond. What are you seeing there?
Well, Cindy, we talked about this being the year of species. By that, we're saying it's the protein side of your plate. Cattle, hogs, poultry, dairy are doing very, very well. Dairy and cattle in particular, beef cattle. So we call it the year of the cow. But generally speaking, we like the protein sector. We think there's opportunity. Grain farmers will struggle for the next 3 to 5 years. But we need to remember they've had a very good 5 to 7 years behind them.
And you talked a lot about the biofuels market and how that has kind of reached its apex and it's mature now. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it is mature. I mean, we have an EPA that can't even make a decision on what the mandate should have been for 14 and surely can't make one for 2015. And so when we think about biofuels, we're kind of adrift because we've got consumers that are, you know, utilizing 13.2 or 13.4 billion gallons of unleaded gasoline. We have a marketplace today because of the drop in crude oil in which gasoline, unleaded gasoline, is cheaper than ethanol. That's not happened before. And so now all of a sudden biofuels, the incorporation of that 10% ethanol is costing the blender, not helping them. And so it's a much different landscape. We call it mature. We'll still see corn demand for ethanol somewhere in the vicinity of 5 billion bushels, but there's not that growth engine that we had in the last 5 years.
Well, and you talked also about this as being the first time you've seen record for all the major commodities.
Yeah. Well, this is the first time we had record large world corn, wheat, and soybean production all within the same crop year. Never happened before. So something agronomically is afoot here that world producers are starting to pick up on some of the traits that us American farmers are using, whether it's more seeds per acre, better seeds, better fertilizer, more fertilizer. We're not certain, but we're impressed with what the world is producing for grain.
Now, you also touched on the transportation issues, both rail and barge.
Yeah, the all of this is tied back to, of course, the development of a new energy source with the United States, which is called shale gas. The United States is producing about 9.4 million barrels of crude oil a day. That crude is moving largely over rail because of the inability to get Keystone or other pipelines approved. So that demand for rail cars is causing problems for us agricultural producers that have relied on rail and barge traffic for a long, long time. Freights have spiked up during the fall harvest to $3,000 a car on rail. Barge freight rates rent to record highs. We're now seeing some retreating, but we expect this volatility in freight costs to be maintained for at least another 2-3 years because it will take at least 6 or 7 years to build Keystone. So a lot of this new fracking energy will continue to come on rail, which just competes with what we have to offer and sell and transport down to the river.
Let's talk a little bit more, too, about we've got record crop production, but we're also seeing record grain stocks as well.
Yeah, if we look at the world, we not only have record crop production, but we have corn, wheat, and soybean stocks on an absolute basis being record large this year. This gives great comfort to the UN because they're not worried about feeding the impoverished anymore. But it should give us pause as agricultural producers that unless we start making some cuts or unless something happens in the world, climatically speaking, we're going to keep piling on, if you will, those big stocks, and it's going to create issues going forward.
And China's production of corn has been, it seems like they're, I guess, overproducing corn at this point. And they're having their prices above the world market then? They're keeping those prices higher?
Yeah, Cindy, that's a real problem, which is China is incentivizing its farmer with $10 corn price is a minimum price to the farmer, and $20.50 on soybeans. And so if you were a farmer in China, you would produce as much as you could also under those kind of price from parameters. And again, remember in China, they pretty much give you the fertilizer and they don't charge you a tax. And so it's a strong incentive to the farmer. China has produced 8 consecutive record large corn crops, and we now believe China has enough corn stocks to utilize half of its demand in one crop year. So it's swimming in corn. And so at the moment, the Chinese are trying to do whatever they can to keep corn out of the market, world corn by that matter, outside of the Ukraine. And so that's what this GMO issue with MR-162 is all about from our perspective. And it's not likely to change anytime soon until the Chinese start to pare down their corn stocks, either through more demand or some drought or climatic event that would cause a dramatic drop in stocks.
Well, that's also impacting their their imports of distillers' grains. They were a pretty high importer of distillers' grains as well.
Yeah, they were a sizable importer of distillers' grains. Now, there is one company named Kafco, which recently will be allowed to do some imports of U.S. distillers' grains as a compensation mechanism for the losses they took on other cargoes. But it's not free and unfettered trade. So, generally speaking, the Chinese still have on hold the corn and feed grain trade into that country. And again, my concern is it's going to take at least 2 or 3 years for China to work through this, maybe longer.
And meanwhile, our corn prices have pretty well dropped pretty dramatically this year.
They have. I mean, we've dropped $2 a bushel since the spring. We're having a 50 to 60 cent rally now, but it doesn't look like something that I would say is lasting. I would tell farmers anytime you can sell corn near $3.90 or $4 a bushel cash, let it go and get on with life.
And you don't see that changing much in the next 5 years or so?
We don't. If we do our model of what the biofuels and where we think China will be, we see corn really holding between maybe 275 in the downside and 380, 390 in the upside for the next 5 years. So this is something that we need to get used to. Of course, we would imagine at 5 years, somewhere along the line, we'll have a drought or some kind of climatic event. But we can't forecast which year, so we'll take it as it comes.
And what about production costs? Where are they standing right now?
Well, they're still high. We still have to look at the production costs on an acre of corn nearing $700 according to USDA data. That's up a little bit from last year. Farm rents are holding relatively steady, but we don't think that's something that can be sustained. Fertilizer and nitrogen and diesel fuel prices are coming down. That'll help a little bit, but there still has to be this adjustment in farm variable costs that has to occur over the next 2 to 3 years if us farmers are going to stay in business.
Well, when you showed the increase in production, production keeps going up, particularly for corn, but it seems like demand has pretty well leveled out. But for U.S. corn, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, for U.S. corn, not globally speaking, but for U.S. corn, demand is about 13.5 billion bushels for the foreseeable future. And so we lack that demand driver unless we can find some other usage of corn. U.S. corn exports will be about 1.6 or 1.9 billion. We know ethanol is mature. So we're really looking at the livestock sector, and maybe we'll build herds or get meat exports going. But our real hope used to be with ethanol exports, but now that crude oil prices have come down as hard, it doesn't look like ethanol exports will occur if crude oil does bottom between $40 and $45 as we expect in 2016.
Well, let's talk more specifically about trade, and we think about the U.S. as being such a big exporter, but our share of the world market, the world trade market, you say, is actually declining.
Yeah, it is declining. We're down to 30% of a non-drought year, so generally speaking, we've got to buy ourselves back into the world trade. That's tough to do against Ukraine and Brazil and the Black Sea in general. So we are not real optimistic that export trade will be a driving factor in U.S. grains going forward. Thankfully, we have the Chinese and soybeans. That's one bright spot. But even China right now is becoming satiated with soybeans. And we'd imagine with all the world supplies, they'll have a case of indigestion sometime in early 15.
Do you see any markets growing as far as export markets for U.S. grains?
At the moment, it's rather difficult to see exactly where that will be, but we always expected that on a global basis there will be some climatic event that will provide some opportunity. But whether it's Russia or Latin America or even our friends in Africa, everybody is still ramping up production because they have this mindset of feeding 9 billion people by 2050. Whether or not that happens is yet to be seen, but I guess I remember back early in my career at the Rome Food Summit, we all worried about running out of food in 1988, and we know that didn't happen. But we do believe that technology is providing some advantages to the world marketplace that heretofore has only been seen in the United States, and that's to some degree diminishing U.S. export potential.
Well, now finally, you talked about right now farmers are trying to make a decision on the Farm Bill programs. Why is that so important for them right now?
Because as we think forward, we're farming more and more for what I call the government. So it becomes a ARC-PLC decision. If you like the PLC decision, you would have a more bearish outlook on grains for the next 5 years. ARC may give you some extra income, if you will, in the nearby years because it goes back and utilizes years like 2012, which is a high-priced year. You need to make your own personal choice. But we are concerned about the long-term landscape for agriculture because we just don't see that demand growth engine, either in ethanol or in export, that can really give us that bump to higher steps that we have seen heretofore.
Well, when we talk about farming for the government, I mean, we've seen the Farm Bill programs change so much over the years. And when we talked about the 70s and the 80s, the programs that we had there being paid to take land out of production or something, are we going to have the support for the government to be able to farm for the government? It seems like that's gone away in this recent Farm Bill.
Yeah, the Farm Bill was really revenue insurance based. We expect that to continue. It is providing a safety net, and that's about it. If times get really tough on the farm, because we're such a small voting percentage anymore, I doubt we're going to get the kind of support that Washington would like. People in Washington talk about the next Farm Bill being very difficult to pass because of the inclusion of the food aspect of it. By that, I'm saying the United States Department of Agriculture should be called the United States Department of Food Stamps. I worry a little bit about the ability to think about a John Block type of program when he was Ag Secretary in 1983 about a payment in kind. I don't see that happening in Washington. The political winds aren't at our back.
All right. Dan, I appreciate it, and I know that the people here at ASTA appreciate your updates because very interesting and important information for all of us in agriculture to know. Here at the ASTA CSS 2014 and Seed Expo, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.